Mini episode 1031 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1031. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here today with a great segment coming up. One of our favorite recurring guests over a period of time on the show, former U.S. Congressman Joe DiGuardi. I often refer to him as a very prominent activist, maybe the most prominent in this country on the subject of the federal debt. This is somebody who was, I believe, the first CPA elected to Congress. He was elected to Congress in the 1980s in New York, in a very tough district to get elected in, and served with distinction there. And with his previous experience in New York City, helping to get them out of their mess in the mid-70s as one of the accountants working the books there to try to get that taken care of. Subsequently, the federal savings and loan crisis. This is a man who knows about debt and about how to get out of situations like this. Those both of them, unfortunately, everything he did there pale in comparison to the challenges that we have as a country. Trillions and trillions and trillions of debt out there. When you look at the whole thing with the entitlement system and what we're going to have as more of the baby boomers retire and subsequent generations, it's a bleak landscape. But you need to have somebody like Paul Revere out there to kind of shake us by the proverbial lapels and tell us to wake up. And nobody's better at doing that than Joe. Joe, it's great to have you back on the show, my friend.
Thank you, Rick. You know, people remember me as a CPA, and they remember me as a former congressman. The Albanian people remember me as important because I managed to rally the troops in Washington to drop those bombs on Belgrade when you couldn't stop this guy Milosevic from burning people out of their homes. But today, I have another claim to fame. Carrie DiGuardi, my daughter.
That's right.
On American Idol, only young people remember her. They don't remember me as a CPA and as a congressman.
Father of Kara, but a VIP in your own right because, again, you are out there. You are the one guy doing this. And, again, I struggle to think off the top of my head of any other prominent politicians, former members of Congress, anybody who's gone on to really do something like this. Everybody sort of gets involved, it seems like, subsequently with lobbying and pet causes and whatever. But you have been, for as long as we've known you with the show, and even well before that, you've been beating the drums on this. We first were talking to you during the early Obama years when there was a lot of alarm about what was going on. Because, again, let's be honest, during the George W. Bush years, the federal debt doubled from about $5 trillion to about $10 trillion, and then it happened again under Obama, 10 to close to $20 trillion. We have now surpassed that under Donald Trump, and I guess 21 is right there. So this is a thing where I know there were a lot of people that were holding out hope that with a Republican administration things would be different. Why that would be the base assumption when it wasn't different under George W. Bush, I don't know why people would have thought, but it's very possible if Hillary was in there, it would be even bigger than it is now. Certainly for all the people like my dad who love to say, but what about Hillary? I'm sure he would hold to that point. But the way that it's gone with Donald Trump, and I know that I hope this isn't too sore of a subject for you, because I know you had some high hopes for him coming in, but we are not going in a good direction when it comes to curtailing government spending.
There's no question about it, and one of the reasons why I was convinced that I had to give a major presentation this year, it was done in a place I didn't know existed, Baltimore Harbor, right up in the D.C., the Gaylord Resort and Hotel. It was a four-day conference by the American Accounting Association, and I decided that I would give a major talk on America's biblical reckoning. You saw, I think, a version of my speech on YouTube where I called it the American Dream in Crisis, And basically, what I was saying is that if there's anything that we want to be as Americans, I think it's good citizens. Now, what makes a good citizen? A good citizen, to me, is a fiduciary. It's like being a good father. You want to leave something for your kids. You certainly don't want to leave them a debt or something that they have to then service without money. Well, they probably have to work to service. But we're right now at a point where even the debt is being disguised. Because when you mentioned, Rick, $21 trillion, you're talking about what's on the books.
Right.
But if you had to add the unfunded pensions for, or the unfunded, let's put unfunded, first of all, entitlements, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, and then the unfunded pensions for armed services, which is $1 trillion just by itself, believe it or not, that are not on the books, you're talking about another $50 trillion minimum that you have to add to the 21. Now, you know, we're not paying interest right now on that 50, but at some point, that 50 is going to has to be covered unless we decide to say to people, you know what, let's be honest, people got elected saying that there was a lockbox and a trust fund, but that was political rhetoric.
Right.
And I'm telling you the truth, Rick, that political rhetoric, that the law says, take Social Security. If the funding for Social Security ran out, then they could literally say there's no more money. Now, we already know that by, I think it's 2030, they're saying on the projections that they may have to eliminate a third of the payouts from Social Security at the present rate. Now, why is that? Because, you know, looking at the past versus now, many more people are retired now versus people working. When I was a congressman, you had at least three people working for every one retired. Now it's about one-to-one. It's heading to one-to-one. Now, that means that even if you kept a ledger, because it's not a trust fund, and they do keep a ledger because there's a Social Security report that gets put out, that means there's not enough money being put in to even pay currently the people who are getting their payments. And that means that the jeopardy here is that if it's worse, they could say, well, you know, the law for Social Security is that if there's no money, we can terminate it. Well, people didn't vote based on that. They were told something else. And the accounting has not followed that. Now, this all started, by the way, with Lyndon Baines Johnson, because at one point there was a segregation of funding. But when the Vietnam War got so costly, they started to play some clever tricks. And one of them was, hey, let's just merge the surpluses from Social Security. Medicare just started, but Social Security in those days, with the deficits, and then put the net. So even when Clinton said he had surpluses, no, that was phony accounting.
Yep.
There were no surpluses. He needed to take the huge surpluses in those days in the Social Security account and say, well, these are part of the general fund, and then call it a surplus.
Right.
So we've been playing this Mickey Mouse game for years and years, and it's read my book that I wrote after leaving Congress in 1992, Unaccountable Congress, it doesn't add up. I said it loud and clear. I think it was chapter 5, Congressional Child Abuse, : send the kids the bill. And part of that bill is Social Security. I can go on and on, but we need to start looking at what I said in the act that I introduced in 1987 called the Chief Financial Officer Act that was passed by George H.W. Bush in 1990. To go back to the things they eliminated in order to get it passed. Because Congress, I had left Congress at that point, and the people who ran these committees decided it was too much to take, so they eliminated, one, generally accepted accounting principles, which then would have put all the unfunded pensions and whatnot on the books. Then they eliminated the fact that I called for the CFO, because we didn't have a CFO, we had a GAO, we didn't have a CFO, I called for that person to be the executive office of the president, but independent, like the Comptroller General is. The Comptroller General is a creature of Congress. That's the Government Accounting Office. The CFO that I envision would be a creature of the executive branch, but he could be trusted because he was independent, and his term would be 15 years, just like the Comptroller General, not coterminous with any presidential race. So there couldn't be any appearance of a conflict. They eliminated that, too. So I'm calling today, pay for those things to be reinstated, because we're not giving the next generation a good accounting. Not only are they going to be stuck with $21 trillion, they don't realize what's off the books. But there's something coming down the pike. And guess what it is, Rick? The Government Accounting Standards Board, which has responsibility for the states, they changed the rules for the states that now, if you want to have a AAA rating, because the rating services are the ones that lobbied for this, you got to put on your books all unrecorded, unfunded pensions, healthcare plans, and whatnot, and that was implemented 2 years ago. Now, I have a feeling that coming up soon, that same rule is going to have to be applied to the federal government. But obviously, Congress is not going to like it, because nobody wants to put that bad news out there on their term. They want to keep this.
That's right. Yeah, that's going to be doomsday when that happens at the rate we're going. But it's a thing where, again, at the risk of shilling for my guy, Rand Paul, I'm going to put this out there anyways. He's one of the few people who's trying to push any kind of spending restraint bills in Congress. It's not getting anywhere, which tells you all you need to know. But something that I want to...
My kind of guy. I worked with his dad, Ron Paul.
Yep.
In fact, Ron Paul put out, audit the Fed. I then put out a statement from Truth in Government. I wasn't in Congress. They, Congressman Paul, not only audit the Fed, you got to audit the government.
Yep.
We haven't got, he wanted to have an audit of the Federal Reserve System.
Yep.
But we still don't have a good audit of the federal government, and that's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point as well. Something I'd like to posit to you, that again, we have, when we're talking about this kind of stuff, even a narrower window than you might think. And you might say, Rick, what do you mean by that? You're already talking about a horrible scenario. Well, something that I'm just going to say in the last 3 years that I've really noticed picking up steam, and notwithstanding the fact that everybody likes to say this is a full employment economy right now, but over the last 3 years especially, and that's just my unscientific reckoning of how long it's been going on, automation has really been picking up steam as far as replacing human beings in jobs. And this is something that is just, that's a boulder that's going to keep going down the hill. And that's an Armageddon scenario for society almost in and of itself, because if you have large-scale amounts of people subsequently that are unemployable, and futurists will argue about this, about, well, will there be skills that people will develop for the challenges of the future? I don't think you can assume that. So when you're talking about a one-to-one ratio right now of people working versus retired people, that one-to-one ratio, it is going to shrink. It is going to be, what, 0.4 to 1 retirees or whatever, which just takes an unsustainable thing and makes it that much more worse.
And robots don't pay into Social Security,
They
right?
do not. They do not, Joe. So we got bigger problems.
Well, listen, we went through this with the Industrial Revolution. You remember how many farmers had to be put out of work?
Yeah.
But somehow they got other jobs. And we may be going through that right now, and there has to be more training, even at the vocational level.
Right.
I think two-year colleges have to be put back to work so that the kids that would normally be vocational mechanics, let's say, at gas stations, now they're taught to, operate these computers and do some other things, not that they have to become computer programmers. But we got to start thinking creatively, because things are not going to get better soon. We may have to get much worse before they get better. But in the accounting, let me mention something that we have to watch out for, because the ticking time bomb in the next 10 years is interest.
Yep.
And if you saw the speech that I gave, you'd notice that in the next 10 years, interest rates are going to go up. Obviously, they went down to nothing in order to bail us out of another depression. You remember in 2008, interest rates were brought down to basically zero for banks, okay? But now all of a sudden they're creeping back up. And that makes it really dangerous. Why? Because guess what else is creeping back up? The national debt. We're going to have next year another $1 trillion deficit. What do you do with $1 trillion that you can't fund? You got to borrow. That's another $1 trillion in treasury bills with interest. That's not, unfunded stuff. This is, you got to pay interest on those bills if you're going to cover those deficits. So if you look at the next 10 years, and this is not Joe DiGuardi's numbers. I had to do the research. I didn't go to government. I went to the Congressional Budget Office. They are an independent group that was formed in order to determine the real numbers. Not that everything's on the books, but their numbers you can trust. And they're projecting interest this year $316 billion to over $900 billion in 10 years. And guess what? If you extrapolate based on the deficits that we see coming down, in 12 to 15 years, the interest that has to be paid annually is going to be $1 trillion. There is your time bomb.
Yeah.
How are we going to pay $1 trillion in interest on top of the national debt? We're not. We're going to add to the national debt. This is the problem. And it's just numbers. And you can see it. If you compared interest costs to deficit spending, and that was one of the charts I used at my speech at the National Association of Accountants Convention, you would see that the interest costs in this year, as I said before, were $316 billion, but defense costs this year are $622. Go 10 years down. Guess what happens? Interest costs are $915 billion, and defense costs are $769. And you can see, if you go year by year, how interest is going up, and then it surpasses defense spending in 2023. These are not just, you know, random projections. These are from people who really know their stuff, and these projections are going to hold fast. And if you look at a pie chart, Rick, if I may, and you looked at what we spent this year $4 trillion on, and that's, again, at $3.992 trillion. Round numbers, $4 trillion.
Yep.
7% of that $4 trillion, and this, by the way, is not 218. This is 217. I got to get the 218 numbers. It's $263 billion. That's about 6-point-something percent, 7%. So if you had a pie chart and you had three colors, visualize this. Put the entitlements in blue. What are they? Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the big ones, okay? 63% of the $4 trillion is being spent on those entitlements. And unless you have entitlement reform, there's no way to change it. You got 7% on interest. What does that leave? 30%. 30%, for discretionary spending. And that's all of government. Whenever Congress meets and talks about education, transportation, agriculture, veterans, you name it, science, homeland security, and defense, that's 30%. And guess what half of the 30% is? Defense.
Yep.
Now, fast forward 10 years, the pie chart. The blue didn't change. 64% is entitlement. But guess what changed? The gray interest now is 13% of $7 trillion. The spending went over 10 years from $4 trillion to just over $7 trillion. Now 13%, that's not the interest rate, that's 13% of the $7 trillion is going. And guess where it came from? Discretionary spending.
Right.
Now down at 3%. And we want a higher defense? Get ready for big deficits, my friend. You don't have to be an accountant to see what's coming on here. But no politician wants to show you these numbers because they can't explain them, okay?
They can't, but again, we're lucky that you can, Joe, and that's what makes these segments always so great is your ability to kind of break this down in a way that people can understand. And it's a thing where, again, It's alarming to see the reality of it, and again, God willing, you know, political will is one of the most finite things out there in the universe. That's how we got to where we are in the first place. But God willing, they'll wake up. But you know, you'll have it on your conscience that you tried to do something about it, as will we for doing these segments here. So always appreciate getting a chance to talk about it, Joe, because there are a few more interesting things. Yeah, talk about whatever else about this.
Well, I just want to give you one good quote, because before we started the show, I spoke about my new friend, Professor Jacob Soll, S-O-L-L, CPA. He's a professor of accounting and a PhD in sociology at the University of Southern California. And he published his book, The Reckoning, where he talks about the roots of our chronically imbalanced U.S. federal budget.
Right.
And according to Jacob Soll, he said in this book, successful societies, while they last, properly account for all economic and financial activity. But he explains that they openly confront and disclose their liabilities, on the books, so to speak, as well as their assets, achieving accountability until one misfortune or another or mismanagement gets the red ink flowing unchecked. And then we see that happening in Washington today. But he makes the point that while in the past nations were broke and went broke through ignorance, there is no excusing any debate since accountants are everywhere. So why can't we account for the federal government's real liabilities? I love this.
Yeah, I mean, that's real talk at its most real, because, again, we are screwed if we don't get a handle on this. And, again, it's hard to see a set of circumstances right now that's going to force any kind of a reckoning on that, because Republicans want their goodies, Democrats want their goodies. Nobody wants to pay for it. And, again, we, the American people, haven't insisted that they pay for it. But, again, that's where you come in, Joe. That's where you're very important in the effort here. If people like you are not successful in persuading all of us taxpayers, hey, this is an important thing, ultimately, yeah, that's the burden that's on you, Joe, because it's not like the politicians in there are going to do it themselves. We, the people, got to get whipped up about this, and that's where I really appreciate your efforts.
This is for our kids. This is for our future.
Yep.
What better thing to think about as a citizen, just like a father, than the future of our family and our country? And we're not doing that, and this is a big problem.
Very well said. An explosion of red ink that shows no signs of abating. Not at all, unfortunately, but as we go forward, hopefully this will work its way onto the political agenda.
If anybody wants to know more, please let them look at truthingovernment.org, www.truthingovernment.org, and they'll see all the speeches and articles I've been writing in the last 10 years as a citizen. No one pays me to do this, Rick.
No, not at all. And again, at Joe J. DiAguardi on Twitter, if anybody wants to check you out there for links to any of your work, your speeches, etc. Joe, again, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on and educating us here. There are a few more subjects that our society is going to face than this one. It's great to hear about it from you.
Thank you.
Appreciate having you on, Joe. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1031.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.